Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation. I'm now at the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 29, 2017, or it is 8-7-2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Redeemed, How I Love to Proclaim It. Redeemed, how I love to proclaim it. Redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, redeemed through His infinite mercy, His fallen forever. Redeemed, redeemed, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, redeemed, redeemed. This time forever I am. Redeemed and so happy in Yahshua, no language my rapture can tell. I know that the Lord of His presence with me death can tenderly dwell. Redeemed, redeemed, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. Redeemed, redeemed, is solemn forever I am. I think of my blessed Redeemer, I think of Him all the day long. I sing for I cannot be silent, His love is the theme of my song. Redeemed, redeemed, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. Redeemed, redeemed, the solemn forever I am. I know I shall see in His beauty the King in His law delight. Who lovingly guardeth my footsteps and giveth me souls in the night. Redeemed, redeemed, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. Redeemed, redeemed, His children forever I am. I know there's a crown of His waiting in yonder bright mansion for me. And soon with His Spirit's liberty, at home with the Yahshua I'll be. Redeemed, redeemed, redeemed by the blood of Lamb. Redeemed, redeemed, His child forever I am. Part 14, Prophecies in the Daniel Revelation. We're going to continue on Shepherd Rod, Volume 2. We're on page 207. We're dealing now with the rider on the red horse. And power was given unto him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword. As soon as sin entered into the human family, it multiplied fast like a fruitful tree. What a vast difference between the first rider and the second. No longer has he a crown on his head, but instead a great sword in his hand. Righteous Abel was the first to fall under its edge. But as a symbol has a direct application after the flood, it finds its perfect fulfillment in the Tower of Babel. As the earth's inhabitants began to multiply after the deluge, sin did likewise. And though they had to believe Noah's prediction of the flood, they mistrusted his predictions as the flood. And Yahweh blessed Noah and his son, and said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood. Now this here, establish my covenant with you. Who all did he establish, Yahweh established his covenant with? From the time he established it with Adam in the Garden of Eden in his perfect state. He established it with Abel. Because Cain had disinherited his birthright. But when Cain realized that Yahweh had passed him by and had chosen his younger brother Abel to make his three new covenant with, he rose up and killed him. Well, did that enable Cain then to secure the covenant? No. Matter of fact, it got him banished out of Eden, which is the same thing as banishing Satan out of the church in heaven the first time, cast him into the earth, and Satan ended up in the church here on earth, and now he's got to have his second casting out of the church here on earth. And as soon as 144,000 comes forth, that represents the casting of Satan out of the church here in the earth. That would be the second casting out. Now, when is the third casting out? When he is destroyed at the end of the millennium. Okay, so now, Cain represented all of that right there at the very beginning. Cain, by his own choice of choosing to set up false worship, Yahweh rejected him. So Cain was cast out of the Garden of Eden, which represents being cast out of the church, not the world, because he went over and was allowed to continue living. He went over the mountain, set him up his own nation, and eventually when females were created by Adam and Eve, no mention up in the Bible, but we know that's the way it had to work, Cain took him a wife or two. And he started raising up descendants after his name. And so Cain was cast out of the church, but not out of the world. And then one day, when this world is over with, and all of the descendants of Cain have had judgment passed on them, and they have their verdict of the eternal fire, then that will represent casting sin not only out of the world, but out of the universe. Let's go on now. As Yahweh said, this is a token of the covenant which I made between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. So now, Genesis 9:1-11:13. Their disbelief in the word of Yahweh spoken by Noah impelled them in the defiance of Yahweh to engage in the building of the Tower of Babel as a defense against a second flood. See Genesis 11:3-4. Now what are our scientists today doing? What are our astronomers doing? What are they? They're collaborating together and figure out a way how to build a spaceship so they can go to another planet. They said just recently if they could discover water on the moon, they could go up there and colonize the moon. Well, they're not going to find water without oxygen, and there's no oxygen on the moon. So I don't care what they say, just finding water on the moon would not perpetuate life. So forget that noise. And they say that if they can get out to Mars, they could inhabit that planet because they think that there's water on Mars, and they think that there's oxygen there. And they think that if man just, but man's got to pass through that radiation belt. And the only thing that can pass through that radiation belt is flying saucers from heaven. Nothing else can pass through it without being disintegrated. No human life can pass through that radiation belt. So what do you have here? Man is going to have to be confined to this earth until it's over with, and he may as well make up his mind to it. But in the type, the Tower of Babel, they built a tower. They said, well, we can protect ourselves from another flood ever coming. Okay. So it says, Yahweh's displeasure over their ignorance of his power and disbelief in his word caused him to destroy the tower and confound their language. So the Yahweh scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because Yahweh did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Yahweh scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth, Genesis 11:8-9. For the confusion at the Tower of Babel gave birth unto the races and languages, as they parted in the separated tribes. The neighboring ones began to quarrel one with another. As they grew into nations, their quarrels turned into the wars. Thus, the period with the Red Horse gave birth unto the existing unrest among the nation. Therefore, power was given unto him for the taking of the peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword. Thus the evidence proves that the Red Horse represents the period after the flood, and the rider, its inhabitants corresponding with the lion of Babylon, and later with the bear of Medo-Persia. And who does Donald Trump and his Vice President Mike Pence represent? The kings of Medo-Persia. They're both kings. Donald Trump is your number one king. He's antipical Cyrus. And his partner, Cyrus's partner, was Darius. And when Cyrus was taken off the scene as the king of Babylon, after he defeated Babylon, then Darius stepped in his place as the king, not only of the Medes and the Persians, but of Babylon. So Cyrus and Darius is both two succeeding kings of Babylon. And then along comes this third beast, represented, see, the Medo-Persian was represented by the bear. The third beast, the leopard-like, represented Alexander the Great, the Grecian. And he came along and defeated Medo-Persia. And then he became the king of Babylon. Now keep that in mind. He became the king of Babylon. But what happened when Rome, the ecclesiastical Rome, that fourth beast, that nondescript beast that Daniel saw in vision, that succeeded the leopard-like beast, that had succeeded the bear-like beast, that had succeeded the lion-like beast, and the lion is Babylon. So the first kingdom after the flood is Babylon, represented by the lion. So therefore, this line, and we have that line today, on the scene today, representing that same power that represented Babylon back then. So this fourth beast, this nondescript beast, the king, is the ruler of Babylon at the cross. Roman, pagan Rome, that was in charge of Jerusalem at the time Yahshua was crucified. They were modern day Babylon then. That was Babylon. Today that beast has developed into several stages since him, and that picture has not changed. That nondescript beast, that fourth beast, turned into the second phase of him, the ecclesiastical beast, and he ruled and with the papacy at the head of it from 538 to 1798. The papacy succeeded pagan Rome, the atheist Rome. They just became Christian, with a new title, Christian, and so they called themselves ecclesiastical Rome. In other words, we're scholars. We're biblical scholars now. We're religious scholars. That's what ecclesiastical means. They took on a whole different apparatus and a whole different picture of things. Now ecclesiastical Rome, but they're still Babylon. Okay, and so now ecclesiastical Rome turns that nondescript beast in the second phase. They had a pope now, and the ten horns, three of them are uprooted on that beast, that ecclesiastical beast, and the pope became the mouthpiece for that beast during the Dark Ages from 538 to 1798. And then that regime fell in 1798, bringing to a close the 1260-year prophecy of the woman having fled to the wilderness for a time and a half time, for 1260 years, running parallel with the Inquisition of the papacy from 538 to 1798. And then we had the leopard-like beast that run parallel with the scarlet-colored, the ecclesiastical beast. And so whenever the ecclesiastical beast time was up in 1798, then the leopard-like beast, he continued on. And now that leopard-like beast is represented by this, he's a composite of the four beasts that went before him. And that was the bear. Now that was the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the nondescript beast. And now this leopard-like beast that came up in the earth, the United States, in 1776, that set up our government for the United States, he's a composite of those four beasts that went before him. So his name is also Babylon, and that's where we get this mystery Babylon's name from, in Revelation 17. It developed into mystery Babylon. Babylon is like a chameleon bird. It can take on different colors and shades just by changing its feathers, by just rotating its feathers in different directions. So, that's Babylon. So at the commencement of the Persian government, that was the second one to this side of the flood, the Medo-Persian that overthrew Babylon, quarrels broke out and bloody wars. So we have the antipical Medes and the Persians now as the head of our White House in Washington, D.C. today. So what are the words now of Donald Trump doing? It's inciting warfare. I just read it to you a while ago on the news about this congressman was on interviewed by a radio station. He said, "Oh," he says, "Donald Trump is like King George III. He and his language incites wars." So it says, at the commencement of the Persian government by Cyrus, the previous quarrels broke out in a bloody war. Thus the words by the ribs in the mouth of the bear, "Arise, devour much flesh." Daniel 7:5 met a perfect fulfillment. So now, what is Donald Trump doing? He's preparing to arise and to devour much flesh. And how do you do that? He just placed his 4-star general that was over Homeland Security at the Pentagon. He just promoted him to the head of his chief of staff in the White House to develop discipline, military-like discipline at the White House. So Donald Trump is really getting smart by the day. He's putting these military generals now in positions in the White House, in the number one position in the White House. Now you're going to have regimentation. And what does generals do whenever their commander-in-chief declares war? Then what do the generals do? They go forth and carry out the commander-in-chief's orders. So that's what Donald Trump is doing. He's surrounding himself now. He's already surrounded himself with 4 major generals that come out of the Obama and George Bush and Clinton era. They've had at least 30 years experience of being in charge of military. Therefore, peace was taken from the earth by the great sword in the hand of the rider on the red horse. The rider on the red horse then today would be Donald Trump and typical Cyrus. The second kingdom this side of the flood that overthrew Babylon. And what did Donald Trump do when he took over the presidency at Washington, D.C.? He overthrew modern day Babylon, Obama, which is antitypical Belshazzar, which was the king, the son of Nebuchadnezzar, which was the king of Babylon. You get that? The third seal, Black Horse, Revelation 6:5, "And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, 'Come and see.' And I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand." The white horse is a symbol of purity, being submerged by the red, which is a symbol of sin. And the red being succeeded by the black denotes spiritual darkness or mental blindness. Therefore, the color black signifies misconception of the Yahweh's personality. So now, what are we coming into? We're coming into the period. We will come into the period of the white horse now, as soon as Donald Trump finishes his mission of taking peace from the earth. And how does he do that? First, he does it by draining the swamp and by appointing military leaders to go forth conquering and to conquer all the nations of the world. Okay, so we got the Battle of Armageddon shaping up, but after that's over with, then you're going to have the white horses emerging. And the white horses represents the purified kingdom set up by the kingdom of David, by the Yeshua, the branch, that has come and set up the kingdom of David. In 2002 is when this kingdom was set up. So now, as soon as this kingdom of David comes to purification and perfection, then the 144,000 will join it, and this will be Yahshua's great army. But he had to send his precursor, Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is not a righteous person as far as the standards of the sanctuary are concerned. But as far as the standards of Yahweh raising up and anointing someone to be his leader in the world, by prophecy, he called him, I'll raise him up in righteousness. So there's different forms of righteousness, folks. Okay, for those that have the knowledge of the sanctuary and how it works, it comes through that process of strict obedience unto the ordained system of true worship. That's one kind of righteousness. But the other kind of righteousness is those that are preordained to do a great work in the earth outside of the kingdom of Yahweh. This has to happen, folks, before the kingdom of Yahweh can be set up here on earth. He's got to claim the swamp of all nations. And he's raised up his commanding general to do this, Donald Trump. Therefore, the color black signifies misconception of Yahweh's personality. As man plunged into sin, his moral and spiritual powers were weakened to the extent that his vision of Yahweh's invisible presence was blotted out. The center of spiritual corruption and immoral inclination demanded a visible deity to redeem him from the everlasting ruin. Well, what has Yahweh raised up today? He's raised up a visible king, which to the world he's a deity. Obama, they christened him and as a god, as a deity. Whenever he went to the UN in 2010, and they set him up on that throne there at the UN and said, no United States president has ever sat on that throne, and nobody else. He said that whenever the time comes for them to put a president of the United States on that throne at the UN, that will be a sign that he is the king of the world and the president of the world. I read that with my own eyes. Okay, that happened in 2010 with Obama. Obama has been overthrown by another one with the identity of the king of the United States and of the world. Thus, the worship of the unseen and omnipresent one was forsaken, and the adoration of the idol substituted. For the state of spiritual darkness had overwhelmed the inhabitants of our world in the days of the Abram. Only about 300 years after the flood, as there is no record of the idol worship before that time, the black horse must represent the period from that date until the Christian era. That's the era we're in right now, the Christian era, not the purified state of the kingdom of heaven, of the everlasting kingdom of David. Evidently, Israel, after the flesh, comes under the period of the black horse. Okay, so now Israel, after the flesh, comes under the period of the black horse. All right, so now if that be the case, then you're going to have the everlasting kingdom of the heaven set up with Yahweh setting up his son Yahshua invisibly as a king set upon the throne of David. He's going to have to raise up a visible king with the antitypical role of David, and that's who we represent, to explain these prophecies as they are unfolding and developing in our day for their fulfillment. And watch it. Israel after the flesh comes after the period of the black horse, and each instant when the world reached the climax of the satanic deception, Yahweh in his mercy and Love for the sinners was compelled to make certain moves to preserve the human probation. At that time, he could not destroy the sinners from the face of the earth and yet keep his promise unannulled. For the assurance of the preservation of their covenant, Yahweh called out Abram from the idolatry unto the worship of the true Yahweh, starting out as a separate nation by the one family, similar unto that of Adam and Noah, and the result was that the 12 patriarchs of Israel came forth, of whom Yahweh made one great nation. The balance is in the writer's hand. That's in Revelation 6:5, last part. And I beheld, and lo, a black horse. And he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. As the white horse rider's crown and bow refer to his privileges, and the great sword in the hand of the red horse's rider shows his prerogative, just so the balances in the hand of the rider of the black horse must have reference unto the people and their characteristics in that period. Balances are used for commercial purposes. Therefore, the symbol denotes the first introduction of a commercialistic idea. Prior unto or about the Abram's time, commercial trading between nations was unknown. Really, in the period represented by the black horse, this idea was born. For the Phoenician Semitic race are credited with the ever-increasing discovery with Sidon and Tyre as their chief commercial centers, who have taken this counsel against Tyre, the crowning city, whose merchants are princes, whose traffickers are the honorable of the earth, Isaiah 23:8. So what has been the United States developed into here in these last days? They're the center of commercial trade throughout the whole world. And our former leaders have tried to trade that all away and give that and put that in charge of our adversaries' nations, adversarial nations like China and Russia, and those big nations of the earth, Great Britain, try to make them the commercial centers of the world. But the United States is the commercial center of the world today. We must mention another little people of this Semitic race, whose influence upon the world has been more potent than that of Egypt. Our Babylonia is the Phoenicians. This state also was one of the smallest in antiquity. Their two chief cities were Sidon, and a short distance away, the queen of the Phoenician city, Tyre. But in time, they were to spread their trade colonies all over the Mediterranean and up into the other land, even on the search for new trade areas and commercial centers. They were the bees of the ancient world, carrying the pollen of culture wherever they went, for the necessities of the trade and commerce drove them to perfect the alphabet. Now, this is where the rub comes in today. Who perfected the alphabet? The Phoenicians. But who went on to perfect the alphabet? House of Israel, the Israelites, and they developed a 22-letter alphabet that stood for, it stands till the end of time. The English language is the only language on the face of the earth that is transliterated from the Hebrew alphabet. And while they did this, every letter in our alphabet at the beginning of the English language was 22 letters, just like the Hebrew language. And every letter in our alphabet had the same meaning that the letters in the Hebrew alphabet had. But as time went on in our country, they developed four more letters to add to the alphabet. And that was the J for one. And the V, which is a half a W. And there are two other letters that they added that I can't just off the end of my tongue right now. I have to go do some research and get that for you. I'm thinking it might be the Q and it might be the X. I'm not sure on that. I haven't done my homework on that yet. Okay, for the necessities of the trade and commerce drove them to perfect the alphabet. They had to perfect the alphabet. They had a small version of the alphabet, but they had to perfect it. Well, the United States, whenever they transliterated the English language from the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, which was a complete alphabet, they transliterated the 22 letters of the English alphabet, and then they added four more letters, so that adding the four more letters perfected the English alphabet, because you had to have the A, I, O, and U's added also into the consonants and so forth, so that they could add words like the preposition and the article. You had to have some vowels that would form prepositional nouns, because your preposition, what's called prepositional of the sentence, you had to have certain words for that, and then you had to have the article, which denoted personal specifics or indefinite specifics. And there's only a couple of articles that we use today. Mainly, that's the definite article V and the indefinite article A. Those are your two principal articles that we use. Okay, let's go on. And from them, the Western world obtained it. In some respects, they were unique in the ancient world, and this distinction was interred with them. For they were not interested in the conquest, save commercial, and they did not mind paying tribute unto military powers as long as those powers did not interfere with their rights of trade. They had a Greek-like capacity for assimilating unto themselves whatever Egypt, Babylonia, Assyria, Persia, or any other phase of the civilization offered. But their chief genius lay in the invention, technical skills, business activities, and in industry, and the working of iron, gold, ivory, glass, and purple dye. They stood in the ancient world without a peer. That is, until Israel was born. And then when Israel was born, Yahweh gave Israel all these talents and skills. That was given unto the Phoenicians. Okay? You recall from the Old Testament the story of David's wish to build a temple worthy of the worship of the Yahweh of Israel. It is intimated unto him that the work had better be left unto his son Solomon. Okay. So, we see Solomon making a treaty with Hiram, king of Tyre. Now, here Solomon is a Hebrew. Now, look at this. Hiram was to furnish cedar and cypress wood together with carpenters and stonemasons for the building. So now here's Solomon, the king of Israel, the first Hebrew, uh, this, the kingdom of Israel here on earth, a replica of the kingdom of heaven, the temple and the whole nine yards. Now here's Solomon, though, he's having to go to the Phoenicians and employ their skills for the building of the temple of heaven and the city of Jerusalem. Because the Hebrews did not have this skill of gold and silver and all that. Now watch at this. Ham was to furnish cedar and cypress wood together with carpenters and stonemasons for the building and to ship the materials on rafts to Judah. Much of the external splendor of the Solomon's brilliant and showy rule should be credited to the technical skill of these master craftsmen of Phoenicia. Through their cities flowed the high profitable trade of the Arabia and the East, and their manufacturers were kept busy turning out their products of the metals, glass, and purple. By sea and by land, they traveled everywhere, missionaries of the trade, the master bargainers of the old world. At the time of the Homer, the Phoenicians were credited with being pirates, robbers, and merchants. Only by virtue of the necessity, possibly nothing worse than legend, but we are told they brought their trinkets, beads, and cheap baubles, which they sold at high prices, and kidnapped boys and girls to be sold in the Eastern market as a sideline. Essential Knowledge of Phoenicians, Volume 1, page 69 and 70. Hurt not the oil and the wine. Revelation 6:6. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, and see thou hurt not the oil and the wine, according unto the Revelation 4:6. For the four beasts are round about the throne, therefore the throne is in the midst of the beast, says John, and I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts. One of the things he heard was, see thou hurt not the oil and the wine. Therefore, whatever is meant by the symbol, it is not of men, but of Yahweh. For it was he who commanded, hurt not the oil and the wine. It is an accepted fact by nearly all Bible students that oil is used by the scriptures as a symbol of the Holy Spirit. As in Psalms 45:7, Isaiah 61:1-3, Zechariah 4:12, wine is used as a symbol of the blood of the Yeshua, and as the life is in the blood, the wine denotes a life eternal, found only in the Lamb of Yahweh, which taketh away the sins of the world. Said the Yeshua, the words that I speak unto you, they are spirit, and they are life, oil and wine. The words in the Bible are the spirit and the life. Therefore the command, hurt not the oil and the wine, has reference unto the Bible, the spirit and the life. But why was the command given unto this particular writer? Why not unto the one of the others? The only answer that can be given is that the period under the black horse and his rider gave birth unto the Bible. The command was obeyed and the Bible came. In time of the idolatry and dense spiritual darkness, Yahweh in his never failing love blessed the human family by the gift of his written word for a light unto the world. For the voice from the throne, hurt not the oil and the wine, is a voice in the Bible and the words of the Yahweh. For the remaining part of the verse 6 will be explained in another study. The fourth seal, Revelation 6, 7, and 8. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, and with hunger and with death, and with the beasts of the earth. As the Old Testament time closes with the third seal, the new began with the opening of the fourth seal. Consequently, the pale horse and the nondescript beast of the Daniel 7, 7, and 8 occupy the same period. Evidently, one beast must resemble the other, or the symbol would not be perfect. Rome was symbolized by a nondescript beast because its government was a mixture of the civil and religious law with the pagan and Christian doctrines. Therefore, it is beyond description, as previously explained. The pale horse has the same meaning, for his complexion is faint, wanting, not having a specific or definite hue, pale, nondescript. For the rider represents the ruling heads of the government. His name is Death. Death and Hell, Hades, are grave, as in the Revised Version, followed with him. This is a perfect description of the unjust, persecuting Roman power, corresponding unto the beast as Daniel saw it. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. In the opening of the fourth seal, Rome, under the symbol of the nondescript beast in both his stages, imperial and papal Rome, persecuted its subjects for their religious belief, and millions lost their lives. Therefore, death and hell, grave, followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth, to kill with the sword and with hunger, and with death and with the beast of the earth. Here is given the exact time in which imperial and papal Rome would hold sway over the earth, to kill the followers of the Yahshua by the means of these various forms of the cruelty. Again, note the perfection of the scriptures using the pronoun them, meaning both imperial and papal Rome, also civil and religious authority. Note the first part of the sentence, and power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth. This present world, from creation unto its end, or the beginning of the millennium, shall number 6,000 years. For the pale horse rider was to have power over a fourth part of the earth. We divide 6,000 into four equal parts, and we have 1,500 years. Therefore, the cruel and unjust persecution by Rome was to lose its power at the end of the 1,500 years, or the fourth part. That is exactly what happened, and that at that time Martin Luther arose against the papacy and inflicted the deadly wound by the instrument of the truth. The just shall live by the faith, their faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua. I added all that. And the result was that Protestantism came on the stage of the action in the opposition unto the papacy. Up until the beginning of the 15th century, the papacy reigned as supreme as a king of kings by the iron arm of the state and the garb of the so-called spiritual authority. But at that time, her power was broken. From the crucifixion of Yahshua until the Augsburg Confession, a document compiled by the Luther constituted a period of 1,500 years, right to the year. For this document was signed by the Protestant states and adopted as their creed, and was a protest against the Pope. So at the time appointed, their power, pagan and papal, was broken. See the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 209 to 222. For the perfect fulfilling of the symbolical prophecy that power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth, here is the truth that overthrows the idea that the earth has been in existence for longer than 6,000 years. It also proves the application of the seals to be absolutely correct. Only four horses are introduced instead of seven, or a horse to a seal. Four is another biblical number to denote that the representation of the horses is worldwide. Four points of the compass. See page 54. While the number of the horses represent the universal effect of the curse of sin, the number of the seals denote the completeness of the gospel and the sealing of the same. The fifth seal, Revelation 6:9-11, and when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of Yahweh and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Yahweh, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them, that they should rest yet a little season until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. The closing of the one seal and the opening of the other consumed a period of 30 years. Thus, the fourth seal closed in 1530 A.D. Up until the period that the pale horse rider was to have power. Therefore, the Reformation by the Luther falls under the fifth seal. And after it was opened, John was shown the souls of them that were slain for the word of Yahweh under the fourth seal. And it was said unto them, the slain, that they should rest yet a little season until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. For the words show that although despotism had lost its power, the persecution had not altogether ceased, for their fellow servants and their brethren were yet to be killed under the fifth seal. Says John, and when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of the Yahweh. Therefore it was the Christians who were slain. Now, I say to you that it was the antipical apostolic followers of the apostles who were slain during the Dark Ages. The altar is a symbol as well. Thus it also must be considered. Altar is used for worship. And as the souls of them that were slain for the word of Yahweh were under it, we know that it was an altar of true worship, the Reformation by Luther. For the sixth seal, Revelation 6:12-13, and I beheld when it opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of the hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of the heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casts her untimely figs when she is shaken by a mighty wind. The sixth seal opens with the Lisbon earthquake of November the 1st, 1755. Following the earthquake, the sun was darkened, May the 19th, 1780, and the moon appeared as blood the following night. The falling of the stars has reference to the great meteoric shower of the November 13, 1833. For the Yeshua, looking forward unto the fulfillment of these signs, said, Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. Matthew 24:29. Therefore, under the sixth seal came the sign of the time of the end. Okay, the great earthquake in 1755, the dark day in 1780, the falling of the stars in 1833, and the beginning of the judgment in 1844. Revelation 6, and it's ironic how William Miller in 1833 was called as the sixth angel of the sixth candlestick of Philadelphia, and being named the first day Adventist, Sunday keeper, Third of First Day Adventist, with that title and name, 1833, and answering the call at the end of the sixth parabolic hour. So it shows right there, William Miller was called to work in the seventh, eighth, and ninth parabolic hour from 1833 to 1844. And Ellen G. White and the Little Advent Band were called in 1844 to take up their work at the end of the ninth hour. It's called the ninth hour call, to work in the 10th and the 11th parabolic hour, respectively, for the Adventist movement, the 4th movement. William Miller had the 3rd movement. All right, so it says in Revelation 6:14-17, comment is found in the Testimonies for the Church, Volume 9, 267-268. And the heaven departed the scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were removed out of their places, and the kings of the earth and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said unto the mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth up on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. The one that sitteth upon the throne is the Father, and the Lamb. This is Yahshua that sits upon the throne, and he's also represented as a lamb. When he comes to execute vengeance as the King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereign, he also comes as the ruler upon the throne of David, Luke 1:31-32, and also as the lamb, because probation is still ongoing for mankind during this 12th parabolic hour. For the great day of his wrath is coming, who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:12-17. After this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with their white robes and palms in their hands, and cried the loud voice, saying, salvation unto our King, Yahshua, which sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb. So he's representing two roles here, King upon the throne, as well as the Lamb that taketh away the sins of the world, as the mediator in the heavenly sanctuary that is still open for mankind's salvation during this prophetic hour, the 12th parabolic hour here that we're in now. These are they which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. These are the resurrected ones. So there's a resurrection that takes place here during probationary time, right here in this 12th parabolic hour. Not after probation. All these resurrections take place during probationary time, because the living saints that comes through the judgment here on earth in this last hour are united with all of those resurrected clear back to Adam. And they're translated into the kingdom of his dear Son, which is right here on earth, with his headquarters in Jerusalem, Israel. Revelation 7:9-7:10. That brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive to hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. Whosoever will, whosoever is, it shall shout the sound, send the blessed tidings all the world around, spread the joyful news wherever man is found, whosoever will may come, whosoever will, send the proclamation over veil and hell. There's a loving Father, cause a wonder home. Whosoever will make home, whosoever come, need not delay. Now the door is open, enter where ye may. Yeshua is the truth, the only living way. Whosoever will may come.
all whosoever in the proclamation of the veil and faith. His a loving Father calls a wonder home, whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, the promise is secure. Whosoever will, forever must endure. Whosoever will, is not forevermore. Whosoever will, may he come. Whosoever will, whosoever will, send the proclamation over there and hill. Is a loving Father calls a wanderer home. Whosoever will, may come.